Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.
Hello and welcome to IMP's AEW Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through the circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. A link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Read the Social Suplex newsletter. Shout out to Trish and Tim as always, and to every person who's contributed so far. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the AEW week that was 30 minutes of the week after All Out, with all of the hurty people in matches. I don't mean the Hurt Syndicate. I mean everybody who took quite painful bumps over the weekend, straight into wrestling. Because it's AEW, it's no breaks for the champions and any of that stuff. Both Hangman Page, both Kyle Fletcher, even though they had that brutal match, they're immediately into more matches. So no rest for the wicked here in AEW. And it's quite nice to every single week just being seeing messages being like, oh, you seem quite happy talking about AEW. But in I inside go, I mean, I do cut stuff out. But to be fair, a lot of the stuff I cut out is my giggles, because I'll be like, I've done a giggle too soon after that one. It ruins the flow. Stuff like that. It's really boring things. I don't think it's... sure, it definitely, you know, mentally affects you when you're in a normal life and you do a giggle and you go, cut that out if it was recorded. Like, it's not great for your psyche. Like, it's not great. But you know, you start to get a feel for it, for what actually helps with the flow of stuff. But yes, overall, I do feel like I'm just way more positive talking about AEW, and it's good to see that it is coming across. Part of me does feel like, oh, it's part the trick of the editing, but then also it is like, genuinely, I'm not having to moan about stuff. I'm not having to talk about really shitty topics and things like that. I'm able to swear because YouTube changed their policy, meaning you're allowed to swear in the first little while. Just a bit more free. Little things combining together. Where I think my main takeaway is, I'm just able to talk about the wrestling, and there's nothing else. There's no other topic that I have to address, or I have to be like, well, if you want to do this, and you got to answer this question about how you feel about da da da. There's none of that. I can just talk about the wrestling. The show's not getting its own way, and it's not being like, oh well, this bit sucked, or this type of thing is rubbish, but the actual wrestling was fine. It's like, well, no, the focus is the wrestling, so when the wrestling is fine, then it all jumps out. There is nonsense. I'll get to you, Mr. Hologram. What on earth's going on with you? There is nonsense. There is wrestling bollocks. But overall, since I've switched to AEW, there just has been this positive feeling. And this is a week where, honestly, there's not really a lot for me to go into detail about on the show, so I do have this little preamble just to be like, yeah, how are things going? Just a little check-in. Like, how are we all doing? How are we all feeling about AEW? I'm feeling really good at the moment. So you know what? With the pleasantries over, let's just jump into it. This week we were from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for both Dynamite and Collision. Nice to have the 2-hour shows again. I did feel it a little bit with the 3-hour show. Definitely a holdover from the WWE era, where I was thankful to be away from it. Thankful to be back to AEW with their shorter shows. For me, 2 hours is much, much better. I will say, for a show like NXT, I want that to be 1 hour. I don't want to watch a 2-hour show of people very evidently figuring out their characters. I don't want to watch 2 hours of that. There's other production stuff on top of it where it's just like, it's just not a good show. Like, guys, it just isn't a good show. But also, a lot of those problems with that show are exemplified because it's 2 hours rather than the one. And I feel like a show like Raw, I feel like a show like AEW, 2 hours is the perfect length. That's just enough time for everything to flow about. I feel like you're not really rushing through anything, and it never feels like it stays too long either. The 3-hour show feels like it stays too long, even if at the end of it, with all of the stuff cut out and everything, if we were to go onto Netflix and watch the Raw version that would be up now, it would be like massively trimmed down to only like 1 hour 40, 1 hour 30, but it's still 3 hours worth of show, which they think would be a lot of content, and it's just too much. It outstays its welcome. I never feel like that with AEW. Like with Collision today, I've just had stuff going on this week, you know, one of those weeks where you're having to go back and forth between multiple different places, then your car dies, shit like that. Week like that just means it's constantly on the go. Things are just happening. So when it came to Collision, I just didn't have a lot of energy for it. Like, when I started it, just really didn't have a lot of energy. By the end of it, I had a great time, absolutely flew by. By the time the show went off the air, I was excited about AEW again. I'm pretty certain I said that the last time I talked about Collision. So the fact that I'm able to repeat that feeling to get me excited for Dynamite. They've done it again. They've achieved it again. And I'm pretty certain the last time I talked about that, I did also enter the episode being like, oh, I'm just not feeling wrestling today. I've just got, like, my mind's just, I'm going to struggle to focus. My mind's just elsewhere thinking about other things. Then suddenly, bam. End of the episode. Great. Can't wait to watch Dynamite now. They've immediately done it. And for me, that is a sign of a product which is creatively just firing, and pacing-wise, their shows are just hitting just right. Where you can take somebody who is enjoying the product overall, but it's just got shit going on, but enters the show thinking that they're probably not going to be able to, like, take it in as they normally do. And then by the end of it, they're just in. Sign of a great factor. So anyway, let's jump over to what actually happened. So we'll start off with the AEW Tag Team Championship match that kicked off Dynamite. Brodido versus the Gates of Agony, with good old Ricochet and commentary to hype his lad up, as, you know, as a great friend that he is, with his tag team far more ready and with much more momentum than the last time these two teams faced. So let's jump on over to Dynamite from Pennsylvania.
The champions move it with purpose. The tope for Brody, 21 punch, 1, 2, 3.
Are you with us?
Yeah, a fun little opening tag to wake us up. I may have phrased it like that because I watched this early Thursday morning with the September dew still on the grass. But this was a match of your big boys GOA going for the tactic of separation, like the baddies keeping the goodies apart and trying to force them into two-on-ones. The third time having Brody sent over the timekeeper's table, and commentary Ricochet tried to sneak in with a chair, but immediately caught by the ref and ejected to chants of bold, bold, and an awesome finish with both lads charging. Brody topeed out onto Dayona and Bandido rotated with the 21-20 plex on Bishop for the win. A really fun opening tag team match. Where they said it on commentary, Ricochet was painting the picture, being like, no, they've improved so much, they're in a much better place than they were. Obviously he's hyping you up like they're going to win. But they allow the match to play out to actually show it as well, so that you felt it, that the Gates of Agony genuinely have improved since their last match during the tag team tournament. But Brodido are champions for a reason, and they are so incredibly over. They're not losing those belts anytime soon. You know, especially as other tag teams are just wrapped up in other stuff at the moment. But yeah, great to start a week, just a strong opening tag match. Sometimes you don't need to overcomplicate it with, like, multiple intertwining storylines. Sometimes just put on a good tag match. Put two tag teams out there and just let them go. We then got an open challenge. The AEW World Champion Hangman Page putting his title on the line against Lee Moriarty. Pittsburgh's own, the Ring of Honor Pure Champion. He got a full VTR play just to tell us who he is, given he's not really featured on Dynamite, mostly being a Ring of Honor and now and then Collision lad. Like, he was in the technical spectacle. Don't think he's been on Collision since. This was a respectful old showcase title match for the local lad against the role model cowboy. A technical lad with a bright red weak spot blinking at him to go for, in the form of, like, Page's neck following the Kyle Fletcher match. Plenty of great counters for Moriarty. No buckshot, as instead Hangers had to fight out of a crossface and opted for the dead eye finish. This wasn't a title match I was ever suckered into, but in just making us feel that Hangman is a respectful champion. It's one thing to have his character say things basically alluding to it, but then for him to back up his actions, be like, no, I've been through a brutal title match, but when I say I'm going to put up my title against people I think deserve it, he then backs it up by doing so with someone like Lee Moriarty, who previously under different title contenders is just not going to get a look in. But under Hangman, he's like, no, I'll give you a showcase, I'll give you a spot. And we'll get back to Hangman when we get to the end of the show. Backstage bits, a recurring segment where I just go through all of the backstage bits in one big go so we can get back to the wrestling stuff. Serious Adam Copeland. Oh, here we go. Here we go. If you listened to my show last week, reviewing All Out, talking just about how much I enjoyed the show, how much I did enjoy the opening tag match, but then also Serious Adam. Uh-oh. So he had a wee backstage conversation with Christian after All Out. This is affecting his family, so he's going to go for a bit and be with them. Like, hey, at least it breaks the routine of injury angles to explain the absence, and it played before the FDR segment, which I'll talk about once I've gone through these backstage bits. I did also see that on, I don't know if it went onto Twitter, but because I saw somebody posting that I'd seen it on Facebook, where, oh, Edge said this, and then immediately they're going to be doing John Cena versus Edge. It's like, yeah, the Facebook's weird, I stopped going there for a reason. There was a reason. When I wrote for Wrestling Headlines, I think I used to look at Facebook all the time, because it was a place to get engaged. So when I post one of my articles or one of my columns or podcasts or something, I would go over just to see what the reception was, see what people were commenting for. Quite often you just see people reacting to the headline, so they were just reacting to whatever you titled the thing, not reading it, which is just like par for the course of the internet. It's one thing I'll give to Twitter, and when you go to reshare an article that it knows you haven't clicked on, it's like, do you want to read it first? Like, just be sure you're not sharing bollocks. There's a reason Blue Sky opted to also do that. That's good, you know, just to make sure, like, you are just, yeah, just so you know, you are sharing it without reading it. But I had to stop going to Facebook because I posted a column about who was the better women's champion across the companies at the time, and at the time Nyla Rose was the AEW champion. I don't even have to go into detail for you to know what Facebook was like on all of those comments, and I'm like, yeah, I'm just gonna stop going here now. So that's the reason I full on just stopped going. Because I was only going onto Facebook to read that stuff, just to see how were things tracking. And when I saw that kind of person that was spread that kind of language was there on the site I wrote for's Facebook page talking like that, I'm like, I'm just not gonna go to Facebook, not even take any of it in. They're like, okay. Anyway, if you see any form of news originating from Facebook, probably bollocks. Like, only share it for a knowing laugh. The people believe it. Media literacy is a huge, huge thing. And, you know, it benefits a certain somebody for you to not have that skill. Oh, post pay-per-view consistency in a MJF bloody promo. I'm not MJF. I'm playing MJF. All these tacks, they're not tacks. They're all doubt. So much doubt creeping in since losing the AEW championship. He'll be taking some time off so he can look at himself in the mirror and say that he's the one once again, leaving the likes of AEW's beloved top stars in the dust once more. A really, really good promo. I'm assuming a lot of people on social media would have been like, enjoy your honeymoon. It's like, yeah, go for a bit. You got married and then you've done this shit. It's like, yeah, go undercover. Go and have a nice time. But I did really like this is feeding into him just being like, no, I'm gonna go and recover. But it did feel like it was a really good promo for him to be gone for a little bit and then return with some fire. It's just crazy to think that so many people are currently missing. Like, Kenny Omega's coming back on Wednesday. But for this period, where like, MJF is now gone for a bit, Will Ospreay, Swerve, Kenny Omega. Yeah, I'm not missing them at all. I mean, obviously I'm missing them. But the show's not lacking for their absence at all. Just a plethora of riches right now. And a lot of it is down to how they're using them, and AEW's got it integrated into them to do rotation anyway, so it's not the end of the world. A replay of the Jack Perry and Luchasaurus history, narrated over with a serious monologue from Perry, showing him digging up the dinosaur. Jurassic Express returns on the anniversary show next week. It was a bit of a tonal clash having him doing his serious motivational speech about finding yourselves and picking yourself back up with over the footage of the dinosaur stuff, and it's all played serious, all filmed quite dark. Then immediately cuts to really bright colours, 6th anniversary show, and Tarzan boys playing. He's just like, these two things don't gel. These are two polar opposite vibes that we go for. And Tony Khan's big announcement. He was on the mic in Gorilla. He's so proud of how great the women's division has been in 2025. Coming soon, they'll be crowning the first AEW women's tag team champions. And Renee was out ringside with the belts to reveal the shiny. And this was really just a week investing in the women's division, because they've been doing all this work before bringing out the belts. I feel like that's a big thing. If there's any comparisons between WWE and with AEW, AEW has spent quite a long period of time now just fleshing out their women's division, so that when this is being announced, it doesn't feel like, oh, you're then going to be fleshing out. So they've been fleshing them out for quite some time now, so it feels like there is a deep division to do this sort of thing for. But also, it was the double whammy of what was announced to close Collision, and we'll get to that when we get to it. I felt like this was a really good distraction. We're giving this to the women's division because they've been fleshed out, and it feels like this division that actually does deserve to have champions now, it's now deep enough. But using that to make me never in a million years think that we were going to get what we got announced at the end of Collision. Now for the polar opposite of that, and exactly what I was thinking, FTR. First off, Stokely is so good, clutching his stomach, still selling the spear from Beth like it was the most painful experience of his life. But I wasn't running up the ramp to attack Beth, I was running out to introduce myself, and instead of a handshake, what did I get? Cash and Dax had the intent of ending Adam and Christian so the two of them could focus on being the best tag team of their generation. You're basic, what happened to Beth is on you, Adam, you just couldn't help yourself. Dax said he was advised to come out on TV and apologise for his actions. No apologies for dropping the Canadian lads, but addressed Beth to say he only attacked her because she hit him so hard he thought it was her husband. A pure reflective reaction to pick her up and drop her on her head. Going full baddie sexism. I would never put my hands on a woman, and with you I would use the term loosely. Which was the line to bring out Willow and have her talk on the behalf of the woman that's not here. Women like Beth are the reason women like me don't take shit from guys like you. Stokely's jabber in response was met with a slap, and Jet Speed stepped in for a wee standoff. Dax is the one to make the first jump and immediately seen with a super kick to that already hurt nose. And an intergender six-person tag with Stokely being the opponent for Willow? Is it going to happen? Is that where we're going for this? Speaking of multi-tags, Mark Briscoe, Hologram and Question Mark versus Kazuchika Okada, Konosuke Takeshita and Hechicero. Man, what a team from the Don Callis family. Earlier in the night, Mark Briscoe cut his jabber on whooping ass and teasing the third man. The word of the day was mystery, and he cannot divulge that information. But Orange, you're glad that he had so many conglomerators to choose from before putting on some shades, and Hologram did the same too. I thought it was a little corny thing, and Mark Briscoe could obviously carry it, but when Hologram did it and he's got the luchador mask on, he's wearing shades on top of it, it's like, yeah, this is silly. Your silliness. Don Callis jabbered on about how great his artwork is, and he was rolling out his latest work, his masterpiece, onto the stage, showed his unending art knowledge, a piece so great that Picasso and all the others are going to roll over in their graves. Unveil it, and there's nothing there, just orange Cassidy Cassidy behind the frame, and a big pop for the Adobe Premiere Emmy error message for this entire video on the Tron after the initial freshly squeezed bit played. Whenever I think of, oh, what could they do to be this, like, the next low-level effort? Oh, the MIDI file doesn't even work. Perfect. When you get lower and lower down into Orange Cassidy with lower and lower and lower effort, just whatever file he sent to them, Orange, it doesn't even work anymore. Orange. A match that was a big old bunch of fun that immediately had the lads clobbering and diving. Well, more fawning with style when it came to Cassidy. The crowd loved him following Hologram's corner punches with his own, like just one single punch in a celebration. So perfectly contrasted straight after by Hologram and Hechicero going full hard lucha work rate. Hot tag grab. The lad worked on and eating shit before snapping with head scissors flippy do to make the next attempt. It took all three baddies working on him before Okada, of all people, let him slip. Cal Fletcher may be the man he's after, but Mark Briscoe got to dance with Okada for a tad before tagging in Orange Cassidy, who just hugged Okada. Commentator explained with, well, he's unorthodox. Also like the idea that so much stuff has happened between them since they were in the same stable together, but every single time Orange Cassidy sees Okada, he will hug him regardless, which I think is brilliant. Just pure character consistency, regardless of the occasion. Every time he sees him, he will hug him, be it at All in Wembley, be it here tonight. It doesn't matter if Okada immediately clobbers him, whatever. Every time, Orange Cassidy will always hug him first. And I just like that idea. Just keep doing that. Never stop it. Every lad jumped in without a tag to take a bump. A wee stare down between Okada and Takeshita, interrupted by Orange Cassidy. I could easily eat another unified title three-way. It's fair to say, you put in Orange Cassidy instead, and it's immediately a completely different dynamic of a match. Hechicero's guillotine, still awesome as hell, used to ignite the final flow with every lad getting their shit in. Hologram and Takeshita, such an amazing pairing, but it was the Orange Punch on Hechicero that set up Mr. Graham's portal bomb finish. And why was it Hologram getting the win? After the match, Proto Star clearing his throat to chat the shit. Cal Fletcher versus Hologram next week on the AEW 6-year anniversary show, and we'll get to that when we get to Collision. Claudio Castagnoli versus Powerhouse Hobbs. Somehow, a first time matchup. Two big strong boys being all tough and shit to chants of meat, exchanging strikes, matching power, going rawr to show your fights. Hobbs eventually had Claudio down, Pac up on the apron, and a sudden snap European uppercut cradled up and snatched the win. Samoa Joe out after to chase Pac away. Claudio sent outside for 2-on-1, but once Yuta and Garcia were fetched by Pac, the odds were way too great. But not too big for an AEW world champion, out firing with heat as Hangers sent them pesky Death Riders packing. Lol at Claudio getting the ref to lift his arm on the way out anyway, after all of that bollocks. A wee chaos ending to set up a 6-man tag for next week. Which reminds me, this week didn't really have a big party match, and I'm thankful for it. Gotta mix it up. I was singing praise about those multi-person tag matches. I just had a run of them, which really worked until they outstayed their welcome. And there was a main event in the ECW arena where I was like, as great as they are, not every week and not one every single Dynamite and Collision. That is a little bit much. So it's good this week to have a break. There's a lot of fallout from All Out anyway, so there is a lot of stuff you gotta do. You got a Wrestle Dream to build to as well. And oh boy, oh boy, did this main event have a little bit of an All Out building. The AEW Women's World Championship, Chris Statlander versus Mina Shirakawa, had a wee backstage segment with Hardy Cameron doing her best as always to break Renee, going from chirpy to glum as soon as Paquette brought up the Death Riders, which was a little tease for what's going to happen. Shirakawa also got a backstage interview with Renee, promising to fight for Tony and win the AEW Women's World Championship. She can go once the ding 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 happens. Top tier analysis from Taz. Thank you, Taz. With Yuta once again with a quick whisper to Stats' ear before the bell. A continuation of a new dynamic, Stats, your big, strong, respectful, goody wrestler, until the end where she wins in Yuta style. Mina's quick offense reminded me the champion was kinda a high flyer before her knee injuries too, but now she's a powerful badass, so she can keep up with the pace before powering like a badass. Mina targeted said knees, which was lucky given she also utilizes the figure four leg lock. Also gave the challenger a couple of ins as Chris shook her owie knee. A foot exchange back and forth, Mina looking to have the better of the momentum, but Stat reversed and again won with Yuta's seatbelt pin. After the match, both Wheeler and Harley out to congratulate Claudio, Pac and Garcia too, before the Death Rider theme, and Papa Mox came out with his adoption papers. Wheeler Yuta hugged his new family member to no reaction from Chris, teasing it a moment before clobbering Yuta down and flipping off Mox right to his face. The champion and Harley escaped out into the crowd with more fingers when Darby Allin with a flamethrower. I did ponder at All Out when he sets a man on fire. I'm pretty certain this wasn't just done to be like, what's the most extreme thing we could do when WWE starts to go on air with WrestlePalooza? Oh, how about we have Darby Allin light a man on fire? That might be the stage one. But also narratively, you're escalating from the coffin match into to what? Well, the answer is flamethrower. Fair to say Darby made things clear as he took aim and walked around ringside with his finger firmly on the trigger of his entire bit. It wasn't just like a quick little bit with the flamethrower out on the stage and then he's just holding it afterwards. Like, no, he held down that trigger. There was fire coming out as he's giving his promo. Allin challenged Mox to an I Quit match at WrestleDream before he went off air, cutting back and forth between Mox and the wee fire boy. They're making fire promises again. They're teasing somebody being set on fire again. Last time they did this, he had Jack Perry practicing for ages, doing the whole gel around his legs. They came up with a logical in-world reason why his legs would be wet, and then he comes out on stage. And that worked really well. It was a whole chaos match, so there was loads of distraction and different things for you to care about. Then suddenly he goes, oh, did you remember about this thing? And suddenly Jack Perry's getting set on fire. Like in an Anarchy in the Arena match, fit perfectly. In a Night Quit match, the focus will always be on them. You can always introduce something, but they are the main focus. So I'm interested to see how they do this. Do we get some Route 1 football? And it's the obvious lob you are expecting. To see a certain Mox get set on fire. It's AEW. Like, it's not the kind of shit I used to get to talk about. Here I am, complimenting getting to talk about the wrestling, and I'm ending talking about Dynamite, being like, are we going to see a man set on fire? Anyway, and with that, let's jump on over to Collision. A very recappy and Dynamite-hyping Saturday episode this week. We also saw the return-to-camera jabber from all the wrestlers that we'll be seeing on the show at the start. But Hologram got hacked, and Kyle Fletcher jumped him in dot red lighting. And what an incredible way to start Collision from Siobhan. As I'm like, do I even tickle breaking that down? Like, how did the lights go red? They got into the TV to display the hacking feed. How did Fletcher know? Has Don Collins employed an evil hacker luchador to specifically combat Hologram? Like, all questions I'm more than happy to just leave hanging, because this is all bollocks and I'd like to keep it that way. The best version of Let It Play Out. Oh, it might turn good. No, I want it to stay bollocks. Stay bollocks. Stay in this zone. Anyway, and with that, we'll jump on over to the opening match, which was the Death Riders, John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, and Daniel Garcia versus Daddy Magic, Roderick Strong, and Kyle O'Reilly.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms. Soft on the skin. Generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.
He's going to do it again! This is what he did to Shibata in Toronto. 1, 2, 3.
Second result.
Matt Menard in a tag match. Made me laugh that he was the guy the baddies dropped onto the apron to take out. You know, they probably would have been alright, and not long after, Roddy Strong was running hot fire over everybody. Like, yeah, because he took out Daddy Magic. He took out the loudmouth wizard over either of the hard-hitting Paragon men. Of course, I'm watching that and be like, well, that's a tactical error. Why did he take out Matt Menard? Because it weakened him for the finish. I mean, when he had ran that hot fire at the end, that Matt Menard was weakened, they could get him. Yeah, but you probably could have saved yourself a beating if you cut off one of the others. Eventually, distractions had her low and got Moxley back on top, Kyle O'Reilly stopping a finish from happening, but the end came in the way it should have always done, and probably earlier with better Papa Mox tactics. Daddy Magic tagged in to rain fire, and yeah, of course he's taking the pin. Garcia stomped onto his head just like he did to Shibata and Darby, back to the correct flows with the Death Rider win. And this weirdly flowed into a subsequent match hyping up the anniversary mixed tag match. The Death Riders, Wheeler Yuta and Marina Shafir versus Rachel Ellering and, I've written down Grillo because I didn't listen to the rest of his name. A wee warm-up jobber affair for the Death Rider baddies ahead of the mixed tag against Stat and Darby on Wednesday. The atmosphere with the stable just chilling shirtless at ringside, particularly odd. It felt like we came back to a very dull crowd being like, what's going on? I'm obviously returning with like way less information than the crowd have. Just very confused, like, is this, what are we doing here? What's going on? Sophia doesn't often get to dance and show off her judo fun, so I guess that's nice, even if it was brief by design. Yuta grabbed the mic after the win to chat shit at Chris turning the Death Rider off her down, before promising to put Allin right next to the dead bodies he saw up on Mount Everest. Bit of a sharp turn there, Wheeler. Like, bloody hell. Fair to say, we might not be getting our wee fun little mixed tag match. Ooh, a little bit quirky. He's promising to put him next to dead bodies. I mean, Sophia's a judo badass. Like, he's setting up something very different than the normal quirky mixed tag tag affair. So follow through, find a way to do it differently. Speaking of doing things differently, Anthony Bowens and Matt Caster versus The Swirl. A far more cohesive unit and a pairing that did at one point hold tag gold, but now they're just a bubbling fire of contrasting egos. Immediate. Now I want to go first, as the story of the match is laid out to you immediately. At the start, just arguing and bickering like two brothers with only one PlayStation controller. Feel. I know the pain. But also, at the end of it, I know we do end up playing FIFA together. Maybe not now after the EA sale. Tangent. Huge tangent. A whole conversation costing them every time one of Bowens or Caster tagged in, working perfectly to get the crowd cheering for Max over Anthony, the man fighting off both Johnson and Christian without much help from his supposed tag partner. Then when Bowens did want in, Caster refused him and got a frustrated earful, like, he won't tag me in his tantrum storm off. No fear, AW has plenty of good dads right now. Jerry Lynn out to enforce more of LV dad tag than a hot one. Like, come on, play nice with your brother Max, Anthony. Bowens tagged in, ran fire, but again the match essentially being 2-on-1 each time cost them. Caster broke up the Swirl's potential win after their awesome handspring kick brainbuster combo thing, but Bowens' fire after was again put out by Caster tagging in. Some form of teamwork in the end. Bowens lamped Johnson from the outside and a quick roll up for a win from the best wrestler alive. The fans chanted for them to do the scissors. Come on, Terry. It was like, go on, do the scissors. Trying to get Jerry Lynn to get them to do the scissors. But Bowens was just a ball of frustration. So we all know what we're leading into. The Outrunners and Dalton Castle versus a bunch of lads. We've been getting those tapes. We've seen that this is going to be something that will be featured eventually. And here we are, finally, seeing this. How does this pairing actually work in a wrestling ring? Yeah, it's fun. But the Outrunners run hot, so I stay cool as Dalton took the cameraman for a spin. Just a wee trios tag jobber affair, seeing how well this new pairing dances. Dances fine. Dalton Castle got the pin in the end and they all posed all happy and muscly. Then the very clear match of the night, almost positioned and designed to be so. Commander versus Kyle Fletcher. 1 week after his brutal all-out title match main event, there's no rest for the TNT champion as he was thrown right in there with a fast and kicky luchador. Honestly, just nice to see Kyle not covered in the keynote tape all over to sell the wear. Like, are we past that era now? Are we past it? AEW feel good enough where they could sell the wear and the tear in a way of, but I'm fighting through it because I'm a champion, rather than being just putting tape on and going, Commander likes running across ropes, running across barricades. Unfortunately for the man's innocent fun, Fletcher gets a sick kick out of powerbombing people, later teasing the brainbuster on the apron, then a tombstone, ended up costing him with a tailbone first bump, head scissors countering and flipping the Aussie right onto his arse. Then Commander finally got his big rope springboard, moonsaulting out onto Kyle with such glee, and followed with an amazing spot afterwards, with his rope walk unfortunately avoided. No worries, right into a fucking perfect springboard destroyer. Fletcher had given the man his fun, so time to just switch in, kick the man in the face and brainbuster him for the win. But good for you, Commander. You got to do your yippee! You got to do your dive. I'm assuming that's the noise he makes when he finally got to do it. Like, yeah, I did the thing, yeah. After the ad break, Fletcher cut a promo in the same backstage interview area. Hologram got hacked and attacked him, telling us that Mr. Graham can no longer make the TNT Championship match on Wednesday, but Kyle still wants a challenger for the 6th anniversary show. Then we got the graphic. It's Orange Cassidy. Pretty certain they're teasing Okada versus Cassidy, so that's the one that they're going to actually build to, but this seems like this will be a good reminder of just how strong a wrestler Orange Cassidy had become. Hook and Eddie Kingston of another reminder match versus Big Bill and Brian Keith. Eddie on the mic. Hey Bill, you big dumb bastard. Hook then got his New York seconds to speak and tell us this match is now a tornado tag. All four lads danced at once. By that I mean one lad down for the various 2-on-1 scenarios. Big Bill out, Brian Keith in, Eddie Kingston out, Big Bill in. You get the gist. Hook all alone as he took the big bounty beating, heating up Eddie's eventual jump back into the action. Then the inverse with Keith eating shit until Tall Billiam returned. Red Rum on the bounty hunter to win in the end, with Kingston keeping Bill stuck outside. It was what it was. This is my least favourite flow for this kind of match. For me, if you're going to be doing a tornado tag, just find as many scenarios as possible to keep all four flowing in some way. Someone's down on the outside, don't make for too long. This worked like a TV standard. Just, I'm not going to remember any of this. I didn't even know where to say it's below par, but when it is that rhythm of just, it's 2-on-1 and you just rotate around who it is, I'm just going to struggle to get into it. It's a personal preference. So for me, I was just like, this match was what it was. So unfortunately, that doesn't mean for Eddie Kingston, he's had that noise from me from both of his matches so far. Like, obviously, still love him. It's one of those characters where he's so good at getting you to believe in him, and giving him a mic, even if it was for a split second, was a really smart decision. Even if I do prefer Vigilante Hook, but long term makes sense to give a bit of mic time just to get a bit more used to it. And onto the the main event. Jamie Hayter versus Julia Hart. The women main evented both shows this week. McGuinness informing us that this is a rubber match that's been a long time in the making thanks to Hayter's injury at the hands of Tekla. Hayter hits hard and all that, with Julia being a cheeky scamp with her ringside sky blue and the ability to slip away from danger. Front the ropes from Jamie to Hart hit that awesome moonsault, and also locking in that octopus submission on a charging in Southampton woman, but just lifted and dropped with a tombstone in powerful Hayter fashion. The wee lass already rocked, a stiff Hayter raid went down nicely for the win. And we've got a few minutes left on air, and I'm sat there being like, we know what that means. We've had enough of these women's matches to know what happens immediately after. Sky Blue made the jump and laid in the fists. 2-on-1 to down the goodies, and it was Queen Aminata who made the save with a Garner flag donned belt to the get to whipping. Hayter grabbed the mic. There's only one way to settle this. The first ever women's blood and guts. I was not expecting it. Like, at all. But yeah, I've been commenting how the women have just been getting increasingly weird in the best way from, like, as soon as I've started doing this AEW version of my show. Like, yeah. Like, I've just been feeling it. It's just been a vibe. And it's given the division so much depth, all the characters. It feels like a far, far more full division. Not just of great wrestlers, but of strong characters as well. Suddenly, blood on guts makes sense. It's like, okay. With everybody being like, it's time to get nuts. It's like, you know what? This division, bubbling that weird, is the absolutely perfect vibe to then enter blood and guts with. Like, this is, yes. This is the time to do the first one. And still totally caught off guard. I never really thought this is the way that they were going. And maybe just like a big week of AEW showing that they are investing in this division. Not just creatively, not just what we've been seeing, but actual, like, heavier stuff to work with. Giving them a tag team title division, giving them blood and guts as well. They made clear that it's not going to be taking place on the 6th anniversary show, so we don't know quite when it's been taking place. But still, especially for a format which had felt like it was just, it's this time of year, let's do a blood and guts match. It kind of gotten to that point. So mixing it up like this, where technically it has got to that time of year, it's time to do blood and guts again, but doing it so differently. And also the first time with the women as well, so there's that novelty to it. But doing it in a division where they've purposely just created all these weird characters just to see them dance about. And every week they're running out and brawling, and yeah, they've done a good job. It's not a feud with like really high animosity like you would get with the earlier Blood and Guts, where it felt like we keep having these problems and there's only one solution now because it keeps going too far. We have to end this. And the main problem was Blood and Guts then wouldn't end it. Like, I'd have fun watching the Blood and Guts matches, but for me it was always a feud ending match. It's that level of stipulation, but it was never really used that way. Whilst this version of Blood and Guts feels like it is more being used to just enhance that chaos and just lean into the weird. Just go for it. Just let the women go crazy. So yes, I am so behind this. I feel like it's a great idea. But anyway, that does bring me to the end of the week. A week just following on from All Out and bubbling up the new stuff. Next week is the 60th year anniversary show, so they've got a lot of big matches coming out of that. But this week, a lot more of this being like, okay, we all enjoyed All Out, didn't we? Yeah. How do you feel about these things? How do you feel about these ideas? Kind of week. But as I said, I entered Collision being like, oh, I've just got, my mind's just not focused. And then leaving Collision being like, yeah, blood and guts for the women, yes. They managed to get me to be like fully on board and fully excited for Dynamite. Thumbs up from me, thumbs up all around. Obviously, do let me know if I don't know, am I wrong to just be having a good time still with AEW at this moment. So yes, this is likely to be like a much shorter episode, but you know, we're going to have weeks like this. Sometimes it can't all just be like last week where suddenly I've got like a beef of a recording for my standards when I'm like, oh, I'm going to make this flow. Sometimes it'll be like this. Sometimes the recording is going to be shorter than last week's entire episode length. It's going to happen. Yeah, but I'll be back this time next week to talk about the anniversary show and Collision. Do let me know if you are on board with the blood and guts just as much as I am. If you thought this was just an after pay-per-view show that was so easy to watch like I did. Or am I in my own little happy bubble? Am I still in this honeymoon period of jumping to AEW where I'm still mentally just comparing it to the other place? So certain things that people might have gripes with, I'm still in the, oh, but it's way worse over there kind of feeling. Yeah, do let me know. Anyway, I'll be back this time next week to talk about those shows. Thank you so much for liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never take it for granted. With that, I bid you adieu. Ta-ra, duckies. Ta-ra.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms. Soft on the skin. Generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits.
t-shirts that get it.